Okay, so get this. You inherit this like amazing beach house, right? Dream come true. But there's this catch. You can never ever rent it out.
Oh, that's rough.
Not even to like family. Wild, right? It's like straight out of some legal thriller.
It does sound a bit crazy.
Yeah, so this whole thing went down in Davis v. Davis.
Ah, Davis v. Davis.
Yeah, North Carolina case went all the way up to the Court of Appeals. So we're gonna deep dive into this one because, you know, property rights, contracts, estate planning. It's all there.
It's a fascinating case. Really gets to the heart of how the law balances individual desires with broader societal interests.
Exactly. So, for our listeners who maybe haven't encountered Davis v. Davis, can you give us like the SparkNotes version? What exactly happened?
All right, so picture this. Outer Banks, North Carolina, beautiful beach house.
Sounds idyllic already.
Back in 2009, we've got a deed. Transfers this beach house to an LLC owned by the Davis children.
Okay, LLC standard stuff, right?
Yeah, pretty common. But there's a twist. The parents, Mr. and Mrs. Davis, they kept a life estate, meaning they got to live in and use the property for, well, as long as they lived.
Okay, so far so good. Sounds like a pretty typical estate planning setup, right?
Yeah, until you get to the restrictions.
Uh-oh, here we go.
So this deed, it's got this clause saying the beach house, it's only for the parents' use. No selling, no renting, and get this, no letting anyone else stay there without the LLC's permission.
Wait, so not even like family. The kids couldn't even have their parents over for a weekend visit.
Nope. Deed was super specific, no exceptions. You can imagine how that might cause some friction, right?
Yeah, talk about family drama.
So fast forward, Mr. Davis passes away in 2012, and Mrs. Davis, she keeps renting out the property.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Exactly. The kids who were part of the LLC, well, two of them weren't too happy about this.
Makes sense. They probably saw dollar signs slipping away.
Maybe. Or maybe they were just sticking to the letter of the agreement. Who knows? But anyway, 2013 rolls around, and bam, lawsuit.
A good old-fashioned family feud, but with a legal twist.
Exactly. And it gets even more complicated. The case, it's designated as, get this, complex business.
Complex business. Wow. So we're not talking small claims court here.
Oh no, this is the big leagues. But here's the kicker. The trial court actually sided with Mrs. Davis.
What? They let her keep renting the place.
Yep, they voided the restriction, said it went against public policy.
Whoa, now that's interesting. But hold on, wouldn't signing the deed mean she agreed to the terms? Like, isn't that legally binding?
That's a great question, and it gets to the heart of this whole unlimited restraints on alienation thing.
Unlimited restraints on alienation sounds intense.
It is. Basically, the law says, yeah, you own the property, but you can't put crazy restrictions on how it's used or transferred in the future.
Of course, you're using your car example. It'd be like selling a car but saying it can only be driven on Tuesdays.
Exactly. It undermines the whole idea of ownership, right?
Totally. So in this case, Mrs. Davis signed the deed, but the court basically said, too bad, that restriction is out of here.
That's a pretty good summary. Public policy trumps those individual agreements, even if it's a family beach house we're talking about.
So a deed isn't always set in stone. That's a pretty important lesson right there.
Absolutely, especially in estate planning. You got to think about the bigger picture, the long-term consequences.
So how exactly did the court decide this restriction was too much, too unlimited? Was there a specific like test they used?
You bet. They have this two-prong test.
Two-prong test. Lay it on me.
First, they look at whether the restriction has a time limit or any reasonable exceptions.
Okay, so like an expiration date or some wiggle room.
Exactly. If the answer is nope, totally unlimited, then bam, automatically void.
All right, makes sense. So what's the second part of this test?
Well, that only comes into play if the restriction is limited, like if it's just for a certain number of years or only applies to certain types of uses.
Got it. So if it has some boundaries, it's not an automatic no.
Right. If it has limits, then the court dives into whether it's reasonable or not. They look at things like why was the restriction put in place? How long does it last? Does it affect the property's value?
Sounds like a pretty thorough assessment.
It is. They don't mess around with property rights.
So back to the beach house. How did the Davis deed hold up under this two-prong test?
Well, remember, the deed said no transferring the property during Mrs. Davis's lifetime, no exceptions, no end date. So it failed right away at the first step. Totally unlimited restriction.
So case closed. Didn't even need to look at the second prong.
Nope. Game over. Textbook example of a no-go restriction. And it's wild because Mrs. Davis was the one who agreed to it in the first place.
Yeah, that's what's so crazy. You'd think if someone willingly restricts their own rights, it wouldn't be an issue.
You'd think, right? But the court said, nope, public policy trumps everything. Even if you want to limit your own property rights, sometimes the law steps in and says, hold on, that's not good for anyone.
So it's not just about protecting individual choices. It's about making sure the whole system works.
Exactly. It's a bigger picture thing. If everyone could put unlimited restrictions on their property, it'd be chaos.
That's a good point. Never thought of it that way. So the Little Beach House case actually has some pretty big implications.
Oh, yeah. Davis v. Davis is a game changer. Anyone dealing with property law, estate planning, you gotta know this one.
Well, folks, we've just scratched the surface of this case, and trust me, there's more to unpack. We'll be right back after a quick break. Stick around.
It's not just about keeping things orderly, though. Think about it. If everyone could just, you know, slap on any restriction they wanted, property would get stuck, frozen in time almost.
Yeah, like that old house no one can touch because of some great-great-grandpa's weird rule.
Exactly. It would mess with the flow, the whole buying and selling, developing, using land for what's best for everyone.
Makes sense. It's like you need that balance, individual wishes, but also what's good for the economy, for society as a whole.
Right on. It's not just about protecting individual choices. It's going to work for everyone, the whole system, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Davis v. Davis, it's big. It's a landmark case, really set a precedent.
Speaking of precedents, were there any other cases like this where the court said, nope, this restriction's got to go, even if it's in the deed?
Oh, tons. Courts have been pretty consistent on this across the board, really. It's this idea that some rights, they're just too fundamental. You can't sign them away completely, even if you want to.
So it's like a safety net. Even if you make a bad deal, the law's got your back.
In a way, yeah. They want to make sure that stuff flows, that property's used in a way that benefits everyone.
Makes sense. It's like you might agree to something in the moment, but the law's looking out for the long game, the bigger picture.
Right. So one case that comes to mind, Lee v. Oates, went all the way up to the North Carolina Supreme Court.
Supreme Court, wow. So this is serious business.
Oh, yeah. This one was a biggie. And guess what? Similar situation, deed restriction clashed with that free transferability rule.
So even though the parties agreed, the court still said, nope, not going to fly.
Exactly. The court basically said, look, we get it. You made a deal. But this restriction, it's just not good for the system as a whole. Got to protect that free flow of property.
Wow, it's like the individual versus the system, and the system wins.
Sometimes, yeah, it's about balancing those interests. And in this case, the court said, look, this restriction, it's got to go.
Fascinating stuff. You know, it's amazing how one case about a family and a beach house can open up all these bigger questions about the law, about society, about individual rights versus the greater good, you know?
It really does. It's like a microcosm of all these complex legal issues.
Makes you think, right? What other agreements, what other decisions might be affected by these big public policy concerns? Not just property, but other areas of life too.
That's a great question. It makes you think about how much we take for granted, how much the law is working behind the scenes, shaping our world.
Exactly. We're not just individuals making choices in a vacuum. There's this whole framework in place, all these legal principles, all these societal values that are constantly influencing things.
It's like we're all part of this giant legal tapestry, and Davis v. Davis, it's just one thread, but it connects to so much more.
Love that analogy. So for our listeners out there, especially those dealing with property, contracts, estate planning, what are some of the key takeaways from Davis v. Davis? What can they learn to avoid ending up in a similar situation?
Well, first off, remember, you can't just contract around public policy. You can't just write anything into a deed and expect it to stick if it violates fundamental legal principles or societal interests.
So even if you have the best intentions, if your cloud tries to get too creative with restrictions, they might end up with an unenforceable agreement.
That's right. And that can lead to all sorts of headaches, not to mention legal fees. Remember the complex business designation in Davis? Yeah, those cases can get expensive. So when you're drafting these documents, you got to make sure the language is clear, it's limited, it has those built-in exceptions.
So like instead of saying no commercial use ever, you'd say no commercial use for the next 10 years or something like that.
Exactly. Give it some boundaries, make it reasonable. And don't forget, courts, they really value that free transfer of property. Even the most carefully worded deed, if it clashes with that principle, it could be toast.
It's a good reminder that the law isn't just about the letter of the contract. It's about balancing different interests, making sure the system works as a whole.
Exactly. Sometimes what seems fair on paper, it just doesn't hold up when you look at the bigger picture.
Well, I think we've given our listeners a lot to chew on today. From property rights to contract law to the role of public policy, Davis really is a fascinating case study.
It is, and it shows how even a seemingly simple case about a family beach house can have far-reaching implications for the way we think about the law, about society, about the balance between individual rights and the greater good.
It's a good reminder that the law is a living, breathing thing, constantly evolving to meet the needs of a changing world.
You got it. And that's what makes it so fascinating to study, to practice, to discuss, even on a podcast like this.
Absolutely. Well, before we wrap things up, I want to turn it back to you. Is there anything else about this case or the broader principles it raises that you find particularly noteworthy or surprising? Any final insights you'd like to hear before we move on?
You know, one thing that really struck me about this whole thing, it's not just about outside restrictions, like someone else telling you what you can't do with your property. In Davis v. Davis, it was Mrs. Davis herself who agreed to that restriction.
Right. It's like she was limiting her own options, her own rights.
Exactly. And you'd think if someone willingly puts those limits on themselves, no harm, no foul,
yep.
Right?
Seems logical.
But the court was like, hold up. They basically said, this whole public policy thing, this idea that you can't have unlimited restraints on property, it applies no matter who came up with the restriction.
So even if you're like, hey, I want to restrict my own property, it's my choice, the law can still step in and say, nope, not allowed.
Yep, that's exactly what happened here. They were worried that if people could just limit their own property rights all willy-nilly, it could mess things up in the long run.
So it's not just about protecting people from bad deals. It's about making sure the whole system works smoothly.
Right. It's like a healthy economy. It needs property to flow, to be bought and sold, developed, used in a way that benefits everyone. If everything's tied up in knots with restrictions, things grind to a halt.
Makes sense. So this little case about a beach house, it's actually a big deal for the whole idea of how property functions in our society.
It really is. It's like a ripple effect. You know, what seems like a private family matter can actually have these big implications for the economy, for the community, for the legal system as a whole.
It's amazing how everything's connected like that. Well, I think we've covered a lot of ground today, from the specifics of Davis v. Davis to the broader implications of property law, contract law, and the role of public policy.
It's been a great discussion. Really gets you thinking about the complexities of the legal system and how it all fits together.
Absolutely. And before we sign off, I want to leave our listeners with a question to ponder. We've been talking about property and contracts, but what other areas of life might be affected by these big picture public policy concerns? What seemingly personal choices might actually be influenced by these broader societal values that we don't always think about?
That's a great question. It makes you realize that we're not just individuals making decisions in a vacuum. There's this whole framework of laws, principles, societal expectations that are constantly shaping our world, whether we're aware of it or not.
It's like those hidden forces that are always at play, influencing the choices we make, the paths we take.
Exactly. It's like a legal mystery waiting to be unraveled.
So to all our listeners out there, we challenge you to think about this. What areas of your life, your relationships, your decisions might be touched by these broader public policy considerations? You might be surprised by what you discover.
And if you do uncover any particularly interesting legal puzzles along the way, be sure to let us know. We're always on the lookout for new cases, new perspectives, new ways to explore the ever-fascinating world of the law.
That's right. We love hearing from our listeners. Well, on that note, it's time to wrap up our deep dive into Davis v. Davis. We hope you've enjoyed this exploration of property rights, contracts, and the sometimes surprising ways in which public policy shapes our legal landscape. So until next time, keep those legal minds sharp and stay curious.